modular Pascal and Oberon, and how Oberon influenced Java and C sharp. Professor, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you for coming to listen. Thank you for having invited me. Dr. Tkachev is a friend of ours and a colleague, although in physics. We appreciate his efforts to make our work a bit more known. As a matter of fact, I have been twice here at CERN giving speeches. One was when Pascal had become popular after the PCs invaded the world, and the other one was around modula, and we had our own powerful workstation. That was the beginning of personal workstations in high-power computing, including physics. I will first have to say two things, namely that I apologize if I'm not going very much into technical details, and I'm going rather to project a little bit the history of our developments and of our work. It may show you that the techniques we present, and in particular its tool, the language Oberon, is by no means just a thing of the last few years. It's actually, Oberon was published in 1988 and then was applied in many places on many projects. And furthermore, it is a descendant of earlier languages. As a matter of fact, probably there's hardly any other language that has such a long history. But before going into this history a bit more in detail, let me say, I believe at least, that I'm mostly speaking to physicists, and at that moment I have the urge to say a little bit about this relationship between physics and computer science. Being an old man in this game, I still remember the 1960s and so on, where the relationship was quite ambivalent. You know, on the one hand, physicists were the ones who made computers possible. I mean, they first of all needed a lot of computing power, and they were able to muster the money. They had projects which seemed, to politicians at least, important enough for granting very large funding. And so they were the ones who caused supercomputers to come into existence, and we computer scientists could, so to say, raise ourselves on the little toe of physics by sometimes being able to steal half an hour or so on these big computers and doing our work. On the other hand, then the relationship was a little bit strained, because the computer scientists who had new ideas in mind and thought they knew how to improve techniques of programming, of design, or as it's called today, of software engineering, they felt that the physicists were actually rather in their way, because they insisted on the same old bloody supercomputers, which may be fast but not interesting, and so on and so on. Let me not elaborate on this. Nowadays, of course, everyone has united happily and luckily and using PCs. All works on x86, right? What a glorious world. Well, you see, I'm sometimes a little bit cynical. Yes, the history. I wanted to say something about history. You will also have to excuse me, and I apologize for putting a bit into the foreground my own work. This is simply because I know it best, you know. Many other things have happened, I'm fully aware of that. I was kind of a promoter and in the midstream of the so-called structured language movement. And that is, of course, not just a coincidence, but corresponds to my deep conviction that for complicated system design, we need structured ways, disciplined approaches. We need a scientific approach and not just a hacking, as it is often done, not only in hobbyist circles, but also in, often in circles that call themselves professional. Well, it started, I more or less talked about that already. I don't want to elaborate about the antiquated tools that physicists loved so much. There were, of course, Fortran, which still hasn't died out, particularly in CERN, I'm sure. And there are merits to it too. I wouldn't say that. And with it, and that's worse, computers that were geared to Fortran, for instance, made it very hard to implement recursion, a thing which is nowadays considered as compulsory and self-evident. You have to, don't have to defend it. And of course, among physicists, the only thing that counted was efficiency. And if anything was standing in the way of efficiency, like implementation of recursive procedures, you had a hard stance to defend it. I came into the field in the early 1960s in Berkeley and at Stanford, and then returned to Zurich, got a professorship at ETH Zurich in 1968. With the promise that the computer science curriculum would be installed, it took 12 years to be accepted, and to establish some research in this subject, and of course, teaching courses, mostly to engineers and physicists. Now, what was available as far as tools is concerned? Of course, Fortran. What else? Fortran on the CTC 6000, and I did not consider that as an ideal tool for teaching programming in a systematic manner. I didn't want to teach Fortran, I wanted to teach programming, you see, that's the difference. Apart from Fortran, there was really only assembler code available, and that was not very good for designing larger systems. And then in parentheses, you see ALGOL. And I put it in parentheses because it was actually a good thing to avoid it. Its implementation was so lousy that you couldn't really well defend to use it. So much for that. And so I said to myself, you obviously have to do something on your own to improve the situation, and that ultimately, through various steps which had started before 68, led to Pascal. And here are just a few main points about Pascal. It was an ALGOL-like language, and that means phrase structured. That means, in contrast to Fortran and other languages, it was absolutely mathematically decidable what constituted the Fortran programming and what not. It had a rigid syntax, and from that you could decide whether a program was legal or not legal. Whether it was correct or incorrect, semantically, still another thing, of course. Another thing that struck out, in contrast to Fortran, was the generality of expressions. You could really write expressions like you did on paper, in mathematical form, with the right priorities of all the operators, with parentheses arbitrarily deeply nestable. You could use expressions at places that where they were needed, like indices, array indices, parameters to procedures, things you couldn't do in Fortran at the time. I don't know how Fortran developed to the present day. Conditions and the type Boolean, a very, very important concept, namely that truth values were a computable thing. not only numbers. Then procedures and functions with a flexible parameter mechanism, including, of course, recursion. Everything was to be recursive. Potentially, you didn't need to use procedures recursively, but potentially you could. Then there was the very important concept of locality, also called block structure. That means you could restrict the visibility of names to certain parts of a program. And then I think that is really the main thing which helped Pascal to become popular beyond languages, concurrent languages of Fortran, Algol type. It had a rich set of data structures, arrays, records similar to COBOLs, then sets and files and pointers. With pointers you could devise arbitrarily flexible and dynamic data structures. And you could nest those, you know, you could have an array of records or a record including array fields and so on. So you had the full flexibility. And that is, I think, was the hallmark of Pascal. But then time went on. Ah, yes, there's a few things. Pascal was designed with three primary goals. A tool for decent teaching, and I think it fulfilled that very well, as witnessed by its spread throughout the world. A tool for designing system software. At that time, that meant compilers, document preparation, operating systems. And then its compactness and efficiency, which was, of course, more important then than it seems now. Now, if a software is too big, you just buy more memory, right? And memory almost costs nothing nowadays, I'm told. Well, so much for that. It's too bad. The incentive for being economical has dwindled. I think that's a bad thing, particularly in engineering design. Efficiency and striving for compactness is a basic element of any engineering design, not just programming. Now, all these goals require a systematic language structure and a concentration of what you think is essential and the unavoidance of unnecessary stuff, which we call bells and whistles. Actually, that was clear to me in those times, but even 20 years later or 30 years later, it's clearer than it was at the time. And strangely enough, we could still make progress on that line, as I will show you. Then programs had, of course, become bigger. Computers had become bigger in the first place, not only at CERN, elsewhere too. And with that, the demands on computers, and with that, the demands on software and its designers. And Pascal was still a language where you designed monolithic programs, big chunks. Bigger and bigger chunks, let's say. And the solution to that is, of course, again, structuring. And in that case, we called the pieces which you use to concoct a system, to compose a system, we called them modules. Ada called them packages. I think module is a nicer name, but never mind. They essentially mean the same thing. So the main points of Modular 2 were that it took Pascal as a basis. We considered it as an extension of Pascal. And I had naively believed that anyone who programs Pascal would within a year have switched. Not at all true. You know? People cling to what they're used to. And most people who use computers are not primarily computer freaks, but they want to get some job done. So they use the tool into which they have invested a lot of their intellectual effort as long as possible. Anyway, Modular had also a slightly different syntax, also it looked similar. It had additional standard data types, like long real, to please the numerical people and the physicists. And it had modules. And with it, of course, interfaces and the concepts of information hiding and separate compilation. Let me say one or two things about that. Anyone can, of course, write a program separated on different pieces of paper. The point is that you want them to interface in a way that is as well controlled as possible. You want to design relatively thin interfaces so that you can do many changes, implementation improvements within one module, and being absolutely guaranteed that it doesn't affect the others. So independent development. That's of course exactly what you want if you have large teams of programmers. And there have always been large teams. And typically those projects failed where the teams were too big. OS 360 already had 1,000 programmers. Look what came out. So the thing is, of course, to have interfaces and modular hats, so-called definition modules, where you specify that essentially the types and the procedures that were to be visible outside, the resources which this module provided, with a syntax given by the procedure headings and the types all specified, absolute type safety within the modules and across the modules. Now, this seems to be a complicated thing, and it was kind of a very interesting research topic. And we managed to do that so that neither at execution nor at load time any penalty is paid to this type safety checking. All is done by the compiler. And that, of course, means that the compiler, when compiling a module M that imports items from modules A, B, C, D, will have to get some information about these modules. Now, this is what we called separate compilation. It can pull in information which the compiler generated while compiling these service modules. By the way, if you have questions, you can ask either now or later. Don't hesitate to interrupt me. Module also contained a few elements about parallel programming, but the main ideas were really program development by large teams, then later on called software engineering. Also reasoning about programs with assertions and loop variants. I think I'm not going into that because the time is a bit short, and if you do want to know more about it, I will be glad to come back to that topic in the discussion. I even have one or two slides where I can illustrate the idea. All I want to say here is that you need a structured language in order to do this. If you want, in particular, also to have systems that might check whether your invariants and assertions given are valid. Now we come to the topic that we really want to address, the design of Oberon. Oberon is a descendant of Modula, grew out of Modula like Modula grew out of Pascal, like Pascal grew out of Algo. Again, Modula 2 I chose as a basis, but much more actively than in Modula, I pursued the goal to make a language that was simpler. I had realized that most people program because they want to get a job done in their field and not because they want to learn all the computer scientists' crazy ideas. So I discarded several features which I considered inessential. And after a visit at Xerox PARC in 1977, together with my colleague Jürg Gutknecht, who is in the audience, and who has encouraged me quite a lot in this direction of simplifying things, of discarding an essential thing, we came up with a smaller language. I consider a more powerful, but smaller language. The only thing which we added was the so-called type extensibility by the object-oriented world called inheritance. They like anthropomorphisms. They inherit things from other languages, although they are not dead. Usually you inherit only when somebody is dead, right? Yes, about the simplicity. It's very hard to give a measure of the complexity or simplicity of a language. But one which you have to take a little bit carefully is the size of a manual. Now, the report of Pascal took about 30 printed pages. Modular, as we have seen, we added several things, took 45 pages. And so it would have been normal for Oberon to take 60 pages, but we managed to do it with 16. And I consider that was the major success. That was really the measuring rod for me. It doesn't mean that you read these 16 pages like a report about an accident or something like that. It takes a bit more careful reading to understand it all. But if you are in doubt about a feature, you can go back to these 16 pages and find out what it should be. Type extensibility, together with procedure types, provided everything that is needed for doing the so-called object-oriented programming, which became popular in the late 80s, early 90s. We had just avoided clobbering the world with a new terminology. We avoided talking about methods because they're nothing but procedures. And objects are really nothing as what we called records before. But what was really necessary was, on the one hand, having procedures attached to records, objects. And that was already possible in modular through the procedure-typed record fields. But what was really missing in modular is what we added here, type extensibility. That means you could, for instance, have a type, let's say figure and or form, and you could derive from this more specific types like rectangle or square or circle or ellipse. And from these you could still derive more specific things. And all of these more specific things would basically be also of the base type. Now that means you have a much more flexible type system, which is needed in many applications, and still having the possibility to do type checking mostly at compile time, and only where really needed, you have to do runtime type checks. But type checking is, in my opinion, the real key to make a complicated systems more reliable. To detect mistakes at compile time, when you still have it in your hands, and not in the field, when your customer will think you did a bad job. The last thing here I say is we simplified even the syntax. So, syntactic notion is really shrunk quite a bit. And this is the main thing why I, even now, like Oberon. It's something you can grasp in a relatively short time. It was, of course, swimming against the current. I mean, PL1, Ada, C++, they are very widespread nowadays. They have industry support, but they haven't reduced complexity, they have increased it. And I think particularly when you deal with complicated problems, you shouldn't put additional complexity on them, which is just homemade. This is a graph which Dr. Tkachev gave me in stems from one of his colleagues at the University of Vologda in Russia. And it is some kind of measure of the complexity, or at least the syntactic complexity of the languages. And you see, is there a mouse pointer? Yes. Algol is here as an origin. Pascal is slightly less so, although I would quibble with that, but it's not much less anyway. Modulo is here, and Oberon 2, it goes down, whereas the popular languages, particularly Ada, have really thrived on complexity. Well, I can't say. I think it's almost the horizontal. I wouldn't know. Yes.
Because you changed the formulation of the syntax rule that reduced complexity in that measure.
Aha. Did I? Uh-huh. Okay. So there's change the notation in the syntax rules. Anyway, it's, yes. Yeah. The noticeable thing on this is, of course, the bigger differences, particularly when you look at Ada, of whom nobody really talks much anymore, which was also descendant of Pascal-like modula. So, let me lose a few words about the benefits of simplicity, or if you want, if you prefer to look at it the other way, the curse of complexity. The first, of course, is the economy of the design. Once you have set your ideas right, it takes a lot less time to complete the design, in particular then to implement it. The whole thing is simpler to define, as I say again, once you have got your ideas right, and certainly to document. And it's with, like with modern textbooks, you know, modern textbooks have become enormously fat. In particular in the United States, I see they really thrive on weight. But the funny thing is that teachers and students seem to like it. And the publishers charge not according to content, but according to weight. And so very often the authors make very simple issues, very long-winded, and repeat and elaborate and so on and so on. That's popular. I don't like that. I think the obligation of a good teacher is himself to think things over, order them, and find out which is the best way to present them and to make them look reasonably simple. I mean, if the student then continues to work with the ideas, he of course will find out by himself that certain things and certain aspects may not be as simple as taught. But it's not the author's obligation to make things complicated and have every student work hard to find out what's really behind the stuff. It's the other way around. And so it is with the design of a language. A document should be so well structured like the language itself that it's easy to enter the field. Easier to learn and understand, less difficult to implement, and that, in my often repeated experience, is the best way to make compilation become more efficient. If you have intricate things that you don't really understand well, usually they come out inefficient. Well, and then, of course, if you have a clear-cut definition, that is the ultimate safeguard against misunderstanding. A specification, be it of a program or of a language, is the legal contract between designer and user. Then if the designer finds a fault or finds something not to his liking, he can go back to the designer or the implementer and say, hey, I'm not so satisfied. And then they can see who's right. I mean, if the specification is violated, then of course it's the designer's fault. If the specification is met, then probably the user misunderstood something or did a blunder. And then, of course, a well-designed language, a well-structured language based on concise and consistent features will cause a programmer to make fewer mistakes. Let's see. From that we conclude that altogether increases the efficiency of program development and program maintenance and program execution. The more complex a task, the more perspicuous the arrival must be the tools to be used. And if the program is, the problem at hand is complex, you have the more reason not to add further homemade complexity through the inadequate tools. Now, can a language be simple and at the same time powerful? I believe so, yes. Because the complicated situations in a complicated program or problem must always be solved by the individual designer. Programming, designing in that sense, is inherently a difficult job, a difficult task, and just not everybody can do it. The language, of course, should help in this process, but providing the right basics and the flexibility for the programmer to assemble these basic rules in the correct way. What I mean, for instance, is that in general you do not want a language which has a huge library where you just have to become an expert in knowing all the possible library routines and which one fits which situation and which one not. You should be able to design by yourself and not always just pick things and concoct them. Ultimately, that always leads to frustration and also in particular to inefficiencies. By the way, allow me a side remark. It's very similar in hardware design. Hardware design used to be to design Boolean circuits and then add registers and what have you, and design circuits out of the basic elements. Nowadays, that has completely changed. The good hardware engineer must be accompanied by a man who knows all the possible chips on the market of the last 2 months. And he must tell him, well, this will be good for your problem and this one. And the goal is to minimize the glue logic. Those chips that come most closely to your actual purpose are the best to choose. And in programming, in practice, it has become similar. You don't program much anymore. You select library routines and then use about 2 or 3% of their code. Doesn't matter because you have gigabytes of memory, don't you? Who thinks about economizing? Well, to add one sentence, of course, the more code you have, the more bugs you have in them. Usually people don't believe that there are bugs in libraries. can flexibility be achieved without sacrificing efficiency, or vice versa? That was a question which Dr. Tkachev voiced to me one day. And of course you could talk about that question a long time. I think that flexibility must be achieved without sacrificing efficiency. If you choose the right basic elements for building more complex programs, then you have the duty to implement them as efficiently as possible. And the simpler they are, the easier it is to implement them efficiently. Of course, then there is always the temptation to concoct special situations by combining a few of the possible basic facilities and make that situation even more efficient. In older days, it used to result in computers with some very specific instructions, complicated instructions, complex instruction sets, you remember, one has completely come away from that. And I think so the same trend holds in software. Now, if you look at good Oberon implementations, then you will not very much quibble with efficiency. Our programs have shown to be very efficient, at least as efficient as the same problem coded in any other language. Well, I come to my last part. I added this because it belonged to the last experiences I had myself with using this language, namely embedded real-time applications. It was about 10 years ago that I became aware of a small team in our mechanical engineering department participating at the competition in the USA, flying model helicopter, which was computer assisted. Assisted is a euphemism, it was actually autonomously flying, supposed to autonomously fly. And I looked at what they had done because I had always been fascinated by flying objects. And I thought, this could be done much better. And I thought that we had, about all the things we had done in our lab, and I found this would have been an ideal opportunity to combine all these things we had done and design a new system for these mechanical engineers. It became a project where only a few people had been involved on my side, essentially an assistant and myself. But I ended up, first of all, we had to choose a processor. These helicopter guys, they had just bought from the shelf the 2486 boards, which consumed a hell of a lot of power, requiring lots of batteries, making that vehicle 20 kilograms heavy. So that's really a massive thing for a model. And if you could reduce the power consumption, you could also reduce dramatically the batteries and with it the whole vehicle would all be redimensioned. And so it actually happens. I replaced the 2486 boards with a small board of our own design with a strong arm. I had good connections to tech at that time. I got some engineering models. And instead of 20 watts, we consumed 2 watts, factor of 10, isn't that something? And had even more computing power. And then, of course, it was my ambition to do the whole thing in Oberon, because I had absolutely no idea why they had used a large real-time operating system. So I threw that all out and programmed one in Oberon. Actually, the very basic thing doesn't do very much. code took about one page. So you see how dramatically you can simplify things if you start at the right point. Of course, the price I had to pay is to design an Oberon compiler for that strong arm. And that took me about, about less than a month, over Christmas time. It wasn't so hard because I had done Oberon compilers before, you see. So it was just a code generation that I had essentially had to change, and the ARM has a very nice architecture, so that proceeded quite fast. Why did I recognize Oberon as an ideal language for such embedded tasks? Because of its simplicity. And control engineers in particular, they want to be close at the machine. They hate to have to use an operating system like Windows, where they have about 10 layers between what they control and what comes out at the bottom as instructions. And they have no idea what it is. And if they ask, they said, well, that's proprietary. They would like really to know what's going on, up to the microsecond. So what I had to do is to extend Oberon with very few features that are close to the strong arm. Strong arm has three or four special instructions to use special registers, so to provide for that. I had to make it able to handle interrupts. So you can declare a procedure as an interrupt handler. Things like that, which of course is really easy to do on very short notice if you have the compiler in your hands and in your control. It's absolutely unmeasurable advantage to have that power over what's going on. As I said here, no hidden mechanisms tolerated. We know exactly what the instructions at, for instance, interrupt handlers are at beginning and end. And what I could not do and did not want to do was to generate highly optimized code, whatever that is. Code generation is reasonably forward. If you know what statements are, you could pretty much immediately predict what the generated code was. Predictable behavior, no surprises immediately resulting from that strategy. And this is definitely what control engineers want. They must be able to compute the longest time needed for traversing a certain path in the program. That could easily be guaranteed. And we learned that this is very important. You know, if we had a bug, the helicopter would crash. And once it did, I'm afraid. And it was a very subtle thing. We hadn't quite understood the interrupt mechanism of the strong arm, but that's another story. Anyway, you learn the value of reliable and predictable software. So I think this Oberon is particularly ideal for lightweight systems with or without underlying operating system. And even here we found the modules with their separate compilation facility particularly helpful. Particularly helpful here, I say, because we had introduced these few unsafe, uncheckable features to handle special machine registers. Now, the clever programmer uses those only within one or two modules and makes the interface such that the danger is held within so that nobody can misuse these features. So, conclusion or a summary of all this. Oberon allows to program device drivers through its low-level features, which are properly encapsulated within specific modules. this Oberon therefore allows direct access through device interface registers. There is no overhead through crossing of module boundaries, although the type checking is fully guaranteed across the module boundaries. It has watertight type checking also across the module boundaries at compile time, and this guarantees very fast loading and linking. Now, the type checking is absolutely fundamental and indispensable because the Oberon system, one of the big advantages is its automatic garbage collector. And no garbage collector should be used if you do not have absolutely waterproof type checking. Otherwise, you think you program correctly and you fall in holes. Or the garbage collector does it for you. So fast dynamic loading of modules upon demand at runtime. That, for instance, meant on our workstations, present were only those modules which you actually were using. No things that came in through routines that you actually didn't know. Yes, that is about what I wanted to say. And I guess it's just about the time. We have the time to ask for some questions?
Of course.
Okay. So, please. Thank you so far for your attention.
Will you show the last one? Will you show the last one?
Ah!